Sahana Bhavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Chant the bottom of page 33 and then the first one on page 34, the Chaturvimshati. Mm-hmm. Right after at 33 and then the first one on the Brahmashri on 34.
Okay.
Atta
Chaturvimshati
Chaturvimshati Tattvopatit prakaram
Vakshyamaha
Brahmashraya
Sattvarajastamo gunatmika
Mayasti.
This is atta, now. Means now that after we have really gone through the adhikari and the nature of the self, and differentiated the self and that viveka between the self and the anatma, the shariras, the koshas, etc., the ashrayas. We've done that viveka, defined the self. And now it's time to move on to the nature of the creation and the manifestation of the creation from the maya shriya. We'll see that now. So it starts out with this. Now that we've done all of this, that atma viveka, the discrimination of the nature of yourself, has been done. Now, chatur vimshati. Chatur vimshati is a number, it means 24. Right? Chatus is 4, vimshati is 20. So chatur vimshati, 24. So it says, the 24 tattvas, utpatti prakaram vakshamaha. This is future. We will tell now. This is what we're moving into. We're going to tell. We will tell the utpatti prakaram. The utpatti prakaram means the method, the mode of the process of creation. How the utpatti comes to be. Utpatti means the birth of the creation. So it says the birth, and what are they? What is actually being born? The 24 tattvas. So let's just look at these words now. Chatur vimshati, 20. Tattvas, 24, Chatura Vimshati, Tattvas. The Tattvas are the one way of dividing up the essential elements that make up this creation. Actually, because he's saying 24 here, that actually is the way that Sankhya divides up, which is very close to the way that Vedanta does. So I'll tell you what these 24 tattvas are, but we might be doing it a little differently as he goes on to actually go through that methodology. So anyway, 24 times. I don't know why. Maybe this is a little add-on from Sankhya. Anyway, Chaturvimshati Tattva Utpati Prakaram. That the method or the mode of the coming, taking birth of these 24 essential elements. And then I look through, he doesn't go on to actually at any real point give you a list of those 24. So I will give you that list just so that you know, and then also tell you where this particular list of 24 elements may differ a little bit from how the Vedanta goes through this process. It doesn't really matter because you can divide the creation up into as many elements as you want in some sense, you know. So here we are now going to tell the means for the method, the prakara, the utpati prakara, the mode, the way that these elements, these 24 elements come into manifestation. So just so that you know, the 24, I'm going to list them, and then we're just going to forget about them for a while. Just so you know. Because this is a Sankhya definition of the 24, you know, Sankhya yoga. So the Sankhya divides these a little bit differently, but since this is here, I'm just going to tell you what they are. The first one, the first tattva, is the prakriti. Prakriti is actually equivalent to maya. Its prakriti is comprised of the sattva, rajas, and tamas. And so it's really the maya that is coming into manifestation. That's srishti stiti laya. So it's the maya that comes into manifestation. Srishti means creation. So when Brahmaji creates, means when the creation comes into manifestation, that's called srishti. Stiti is when, as the creation, remains, remains manifest. That's stiti. It stays in place. Laya is when it goes into a state of resolution. So the creation itself is considered to be cyclical, continually from beginningless time coming into manifestation, you know. The srishti, stiti, laya. Srishti, stiti, laya from beginningless time. So when it comes into manifestation, what happens? What is actually, if we kind of slow down that process, you know, and see just in terms of stages, even though in the manifestation of the creation, I don't think it's that slow. First comes this. It's kind of a pew. There it is. Stiti and laya. But let's look at these. These 24. So the first one is prakriti. Prakriti is maya. So it's comprised of sattva, rajas, and tamas. The second one, according to the Sankhya, is called mahat. Now, mahat really is, from a collective space, looked at collectively, we call it from the samishti point of view, from the collective point of view, mahat is Hiranyagarbha. It's like the subtle five organs, and the subtle elements in total, collectively, will come into manifestation as Hiranyagarbha, which is the subtle aspect of Ishwara. Okay, so that's the mahat. From the standpoint of the jiva, it's the buddhi, and the buddhi is included in the mahat. Now, sometimes, I think in Katha Upanishad and also in the Mundaka Upanishad, some of these Upanishads, they kind of share verses, or the verses are very similar, exactly the same or similar. Not many, just a handful of them. This happens to be one of those where, when we're looking at the resolution of myself in terms of viveka, going from the physical body, resolving the physical body into the sense organs, into the prana, into the mind, into the buddhi, then into the mahat, and then into the self. Because what that does is recognize that your buddhi itself is part and parcel of Hiranyagarbha. And then when you've placed your buddhi into Hiranyagarbha, the subtle aspect of Ishwara, right, the subtle aspect of Ishwara is the best sukshma aspect of Ishwara, then you're going to be resolving, you've already resolved the buddhi, the jiva, you know, the individual buddhi into the whole, and then you resolve the whole into Brahman. And so that's actually a very beautiful meditation. Often, in the Drikdrisha Viveka, we leave out the mahat. But not, and the Upanishads sometimes leave out the Mahat, this Hiranyagarbha, in terms of this resolution into my own nature, and sometimes it's included. Okay, so just so that you know, so Mahat and Buddhi, where the Buddhi is part of the Mahat, the infinite Hiranyagarbha. So that would be the second one. The third one is the Ahankara, the I notion. So once, because when, from the standpoint of the Jiva, there's Ajnanam there, but because the Buddhi, right, reflects consciousness, the Buddhi has a sense of self, right? Because even though it's mithya, it reflecting consciousness or consciousness manifests there, it will naturally, inevitably make that mistake that I am the conscious being. Right? That's the birth of the Ahankara caused by Ajnana. So you've got the Prakriti, the Mahat / Buddhi, then the Ahankara, and then you have, they say, is the mind. The mind itself comes into manifestation, the one that's receiving all of the one that in the end can receive all of the vritti, so the manas, so the mind. Then they have the five sense organs and the five organs of action. So that's 10. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Let me see if this counts right, okay? Then they have something, so the five organs of action, the five sense organs, the five organs of action, the sattva and the rajas elements, so the manasa sattva, the five sense organs are sattva, the five organs of action are rajas, right? And then they have one that we don't usually deal with, but I've actually seen this type of a unfoldment actually used in the Upanishads. This is called the Tanmatras. And so this is another five. The five Tanmatras. What the five Tanmatras are the five subtle essences which can't, of the sattvic essences, which actually cannot be perceived. They're not perceivable. But they are something, those, and what they are, the five subtle essences of the, I have to do this in the, I have to get over into the Sankhya realm. So the five subtle elements of the sense objects. The five subtle elements of the sense objects. Like, for instance, for the ears, sense of hearing, the sense object is going to be sound. Right? That's its sense object. For the sense of touch, we'll see this in detail, but the sense object is going to be, you know, feelings that you have from touching. And so like that, if you think that these have a subtle essence, which then itself will come into manifestation as what we call the physical elements, the tamas elements, the five tamas elements. But these five, looking at it as a separate, like the five Tanmatras as separate, and then on top of that, then we have the five physical elements, that, when you add it up, comes to 24. And so what is different here is in this hierarchy, the way that this is done, there's the addition at the top of Hiranyagarbha, the Mahat, Hiranyagarbha. Now, it's not that it's wrong. It's just, it's fine, actually. It's just one way of doing this division, of unfolding this division. So what differs a little is this Mahat Buddhi as part of it, Mahat Buddhi, and then the Ahankara, then the mind, then the five subtle elements and the ten mantras, and then the physical elements. This will add up into 24. We leave out, in this unfoldment as we're teaching it, this Mahat and Buddhi. That comes, it's put into a different category, not separate. The Ahankara also is put into a different category, not separate. And also the ten mantras are not talked about like that at all. But you will see sometimes in the Upanishads that they, in terms of the Upanishads themselves, in terms of the order of creation, the sense objects and the sense organs, the sense, the five physical elements and the sense objects and sense organs come after the ten mantras. So that's just something different. We don't do it that way. I have to read up on this again. So I did read up on it, but I don't always remember, but because it's Sankhya, not Vedanta. But it's there in the Vedanta. Because I remember actually being confused about it and asking Swamiji about it. Why do you say that the sense objects or the sense organs are born from the sense objects? Why would you say that? Why are the sense organs, wouldn't the sense organs come first and then the sense objects? But it says the sense objects come first, and from there the sense organs. That's because they're talking about the 10 mantras being subtle. This subtle aspect of the sense objects are responsible for the sense organs, like that. You see? Mm-hmm. I'll do it a little better later. And I don't have it as fingertip as I would like to. Okay, so. So we're going to now, using these 24, elements, essential elements, we're going to start going through in a minute how this world comes into manifestation, this creation. But before that, we have to see the relationship between Brahman and Maya. Otherwise, this won't be understood properly. So here, this next line, Brahmashriya, Brahmashriya, say Brahmashriya.
Brahmashriya.
Brahmashriya. Sattva,
sattva,
rajas,
rajas,
tamoguna,
tamoguna,
atmika,
atmika,
maya asti,
maya asti.
So to make this into a sentence, maya asti, maya is, maya asti means it. So maya is what? Brahmashriya. So in English we would say, maya has for its ashriya Brahman. Brahman is its ashriya. Ashriya means that which is the support or the basis of something. That is its ashriya. So here, when we're talking about ashriya, so we say Brahmashriya Maya. Maya has for its basis Brahman, the Satchidananda Swarupa Atma, which is Brahman. Okay. So Maya has for its ashriya Brahman, has for its basis. What we mean by basis, what's the more correct word for it? It has for its adhishtana, the Brahman. Brahman is its adhishtana. Brahman is its basis. That basis is the adhishtana for Maya, because Maya is mitya. So it's a little different. When you say ashriya, like this platform can be the ashriya for this iPhone. The iPhone is sitting on this ashriya platform. So ashriya has different meanings, but it all has something which is dependent on it, which is sitting on it, which is resting on it, is the ashriya. But here, there's not maya resting on Brahman like the iPhone is resting on the platform. Because the iPhone and the platform are the same order of reality, right? So here, I am resting, I am seated on this. But I am of the same order of reality, made out of the same materials that the body that the sukshma sharira enters when you are born. This little body enters this body, and this body becomes, if you remember way back when, this body becomes a counter of experience for this physical world. And then the world is experienced through the subtle sense organs that are enlivening the five sense organs in order to experience, to have the actual experience. But this physical body is appropriate for the sukshma sharira to enter if it is to have experience in this on this particular plane. So we all have to be in the same order of reality, right, in order for that to happen. So the sukshma sharira makes use of this physical body in order to experience this world. And so this world becomes the one that contains, it's the ayat, and it's the place, it's the container for the sukshma sharira to experience this world. And so this body is of the same point here. This physical body is the same order of reality as this. Right? It's the same if you think about it in terms of the dream. If you have a dream, the dream characters, the dream animals, the dream sense objects, and the dream universe are all of the same order of reality. That's why everything is real. That's why a dream character being of the same order of reality as the dream, of the dream sense organs, the dream organs of action, and of the dream world, the dream, while you're from the one who's in it, it appears absolutely real, and you can say, I'm real. Look, if I pinch myself, it hurts. How can you say I'm not real? If I try to lift up this platform, it's very heavy. How can you say that it's not real? Well, of course it's real. It has its own vyavahara. It has its own empirical reality within itself, within itself. You know, it's not our empirical reality here, and the rules are a little different. But the rules aren't different among the individuals who are enjoying or contained in that dream world. And so if you have, you know, all of the, if you have the five sense organs and the five sense objects, and one of the sense organs is the sense of touch, and then the subtle karmendriyas, the dream karmendriyas, the organs of action come along, and you take your pani, your hand goes like this, you know, then through the sense of touch, you go, ah, okay. You say, how can you say I'm not real? Look, you know. And it is completely real within its own container. It's just when you look at the container, it's completely mitya. You wake up from it, and the adhishtana of that mitya just remains untouched. It is absolutely there. The adhishtana is actually absolutely there. The dream couldn't have any being, any such chit at all, without that, with any, no existence, no sense of being, no consciousness. It can't be known without that adhishtana. When you wake up from it and the dream is gone, what is left? Is the adhishtana. The adhishtana as the ashriya, as that which is really the truth, you know, that which is really supporting, you know, the dream, is a different order of reality from the dream. But the dream never touches it in any way. It's a different order of reality. Just like we have this, you know, in terms of within Vyavahara. Vyavahara means within this empirical reality that we're experiencing through our sense organs. We experience these different orders of reality whenever we project something on something else. And then you realize it's a projection. I mean, this is the bread and butter of the psychology, is being able to withdraw these projections that are so real when they're happening. But it's a projection. It is a different order of reality. And we understand that so well when we realize that we projected something. Like when you project, which is the common example for us, is that if you project a snake on a rope, when that projection is taking place, that projection is actually a different order of reality. That projection is taking place in your mind, and it's externalized. So we're able to do that, seeing that shape, triggers something in my mind that looks like a snake, you know. And so now instead of seeing with my eyes this object, I see that object, same shape, exactly the same shape, but missing the snakeness. I see in my mind a snake. And I respond emotionally and every other way to that snake. And then I realize upon inquiry that there's no snake there. There never has been a snake there. The reality, the satyam, within brackets in terms of a drishtanta, the satyam is only the rope. The snake is mitya. Right? The snake is a different order of reality. If you went to pick up the snake, you'd be picking up a rope. And you'd realize it's not that the snake drips off the rope. The snake is a different order of reality. So we get to experience these different orders of reality, and unless we have some sort of a psychosis or something like that, we're very aware of it. We can wake up from it, especially, I'm saying, like your daydreams. Your daydreams are a different order of reality. Your dreams are a different order of reality. Our projections onto others are a different order of reality. But when that different order of reality is happening to you, when it's there, that is what you're experiencing, and it seems real until some viveka has been done. The difference that we have in reference to our experiences of this creation, or I am subjectively superimposing or projecting something on something else within this creation. Like, for instance, when I see the rope, the snake goes away. I need to see the rope. But by seeing the rope, the snake goes away. I realize that that was a projection. When I'm in therapy and I analyze, you know, I start to analyze my relationships or my feelings or the hurts and pains that are arising in reference to what so-and-so said or what so-and-so would happen, then I start to realize, well, really that's me. That's my own projection on, you know, something that really has nothing to do with that, except that that person or situation is triggering it. It's triggering that, but they themselves don't have any idea. And so we experience that when we realize at different times in our life, you recognize, wow, that was so real, and it was not real at all. But while it is there, it is so very real. But once you realize it, that projection, because it's subjective, is gone. Now, in terms of this creation, this whole creation, and here we are in it, when we realize that this whole creation is maya, that its order of reality is only mitya, the way that it behaves is a little differently than if this creation was the subtle projection of my mind. If it was the subtle, that's jiva srishti. This creation was the projection of my mind, right? Then when I realize that this is just a projection, or I wake up from it, it's gone, like the dream. The dream is a subtle projection. It's very real. It's a projection of my mind. When I'm in the dream, it's all real, you know, and everything works. I'm part of the whole thing. But when I wake up from it, that dream doesn't linger. It's completely gone because it's maya, it's mitya. And I have recognized the adhishtana. And when I recognize the adhishtana, the truth of it, it goes away. So we have the experience of maya, beautifully so, because our experiences of maya are wonderful, our personal jiva srishti experiences of maya are perfect for, as a drishtanta, to help us understand what's happening here. Then the question is, yeah, but I don't want the whole universe to go away, so don't tell me about it right now. I don't really want to know what the adhishtana of this projection is, if it's going to go away once I understand. I'm not ready for that. You know? Mm-hmm. It's interesting and all, but I don't want to see it right now. I don't want, because I want to live. But now, say, why is it different? Why is it different here? Because both are mitya. In this case, when I say that, when the Shastra says that Brahman, which is who you actually are, this me that you take to be a limited being in the form of the body, mind, sense organs, you recognize that, in fact, the being, the me that you are, is actually non-dual. It's actually limitless. There's nothing containing it at all. And there's no other thing in relationship to it. All other things are mitya. They are maya. They belong to a different order of reality that totally depends upon my being, borrows as though my being, for its existence and for its knownness. So ultimately, this world is known only because of consciousness. Just think about this. I have my eyes and my five sense organs, and they're all looking at you, but there is no consciousness. What would that be like? It'd be awful. It's a dead body sitting here looking at you. Here the eyes are, rot wide out. They're very aware. Okay. My poor mind, okay. It's going into funny areas. But just think about it. Your sense organs, these physical sense organs, you know, for that subject-object relationship to take place, for your mind, you know, for your mind to function, to have vrittis, which are known, requires consciousness. Without consciousness, there is no nothing being known. There's just basically tamas. There's basically inertness. There's no functioning. There's no functioning vritti. These organs, sense organs, are not able to do their job. If the pranas aren't there, you know, there's no breathing. There's no grasping. There's no circulatory system. So this physical body is actually very dependent upon the subtle body. And reference to the subtle body, this world that is known is very dependent upon the mind, the buddhi, the mind, the citta, the ahankara, these, but just basically the mind, the sattva that reflects consciousness and the sense organs. That's how come you know this. Right? But now the thing is, in this viveka, the consciousness or the atma, yourself, which is which is the consciousness, and which is the sat, which is being itself, right? With that, and satchit ananda, which we've just been through, that is your nature. And we've realized that consciousness is pervasive to every experience you have. It is known, it is known, it is known. The satyam, the sat, which is your nature, being is your nature, is pervasive to everything that you experience. But you can't look at it. It doesn't lend itself to a subject-object relationship within Maya. The subject-object relationship exists within Maya. To have a subject-object relationship, you have to have sense organs. Right? You have to have a sense organs, you have to have mind, you have to have time and space to differentiate the one from the other. So your knowership and your experience of this world requires the world to be here, and it requires you within the world to be here, to have these types of relationships. But and to have these, you know, these knowledges that we accrue through our experiences. But these experiences that we have require existence and consciousness. Take away the sat-chit from the experiences that we have, and there is no experience. First of all, there would be no being, no existence, and there would be no experience, because sat-chit. Now, existence itself can't be an object within consciousness. It's not, I mean, within the creation. You can't look at it. I mean, we all know that. Okay, let's look at, here's some existence. I'm teaching you Vedanta, and I want you to memorize all things to know how we label it. Now, right here, we have some existence. This existence right here is called sat. This is sat. And over here, we have some consciousness. Now, we cannot do it, but at the same time, there is nothing away from sat-chit, from consciousness, from existence. Nothing. Internally or externally, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. That's because it's the wood of the desk. That's because it's the adhishtana. You know, it's the adhishtana. That's what we mean by adhishtana. It is the adhishtana of what has for its order of reality mitya. So maya has for its order of reality mitya, because upon any analysis, mitya, you can't find maya. You can't say, oh, this thing is maya. You can say, this is all maya. This is a big magic show in a way. This is all maya. But take one thing in maya and try to tell me what that is. And what you'll find is that you really can't do that. You just have to be practical. You have to be very practical, you know, and you have to say, okay, what is this? This is an iPhone, okay? That's really practical, because actually this thing is made of thousands and thousands of parts. And now what if you were going to tell me what it really is? That this thing here is a conglomerate of thousands upon thousands of parts, and each one of those parts is also infinitely divisible. So how are you going to tell me about this? You can't. And so you know what? We don't think about it, because it's very, very impractical. You try to find any what we call singular thing in this maya, and it's not possible. You try to find any thing in this maya which doesn't have a beginning and an end, that doesn't come into being and go out of being. And if you can't tell me that this thing, which is really not there, but that this thing is beginningless and endless, that it is free from time, It has to be maya, because it requires an adhishtana. Nothing can come from non-existence and go into non-existence, because there's no such thing. So if something has a beginning and end, that has to resolve into, ultimately, its adhishtana. The beginning, it comes really from its adhishtana, and the end, it sinks back into its adhishtana. The adhishtana is that which is actually there. In the end, the only real adhishtana, because the desk has the adhishtana of the wood, but the wood has the adhishtana of the chips, and the chips have the adhishtana of the dust, and the dust has the adhishtana of the molecules, and the molecules have the adhishtana of the quarks, and I don't have any more instrumentation, but you know what I mean? So it goes into an infinite regress. There is no adhishtana to be found here that will give being, that itself will have being to lend to anything within maya. And in fact, anything that exists within the creation has the same mithya categorization as anything else exists in the creation, because it's all coming and going. So what is the adhishtana here within the creation? What gives us its being, its consciousness? You know, neither can be objectified, first of all, so it's not going to be in the creation. You know, you can't remove existence and consciousness from the creation, or it won't be there. And yet we only experience as the ultimate common denominator of everything we experience, including this body, mind, sense organs, as existence, consciousness. It's really good that that's our adhishtana also. Because for me, as a jiva, with its body, mind, sense organs, I don't need to see it. If the adhishtana of this body, mind, sense organs is conscious being, and that is my adhishtana, then I don't have to see it because I am it, right? But if I have to use my sense organs to discover it, that is fruitless. It's not objectifiable, because it's the very adhishtana of even your sense organs and your mind and your buddhi and ajnanam itself and maya itself. Because here's this maya. Is it here or not? Yes, it's here. We're experiencing it. You know, you're experiencing it. That means it is here and you're aware of it. That's satchit. Do you know your ignorance? What do you mean, do I know my ignorance? Well, ask me something. Do you know Chinese? At least for myself, my immediate response, without having to give too much thought about it, is, I don't, I definitely don't. Well, I think you do. I think you know Chinese. And don't, now the Chinese speakers have to be quiet. Well, Swahili. You know Swahili. I don't. Yes, you do. I'm sure you do. I don't. I'm positive that I don't. It's not in my memory banks. It is nowhere. I simply do not know it. I promise you. So I'm aware of what I know. And you know, interestingly, I'm aware of what I don't know, but I also illumine what I know. You know? Do you know English? Yeah, I know it pretty well. You know? Do you know Swedish? I don't, but you do. You know? I'm very clear about that. I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. So these are also objects of my knowledge. And all of them exist. All of them enjoy my satchit. Even saying my satchit, that's a misnomer a little bit. You have to say the satchit, the conscious being, which is myself, because I can't objectify it. I can objectify time and space, but I can't objectify me, of course. Because then who would be the one doing the objectification? What would allow for that type of objectification? So I am actually the bottom line, conscious being, and I am not an object in the creation. I am not bound by time, therefore. I am not bound by space, therefore. But there is nothing that does not depend upon me. Of course, my body depends on me, my sense organs depend on me, my mind depends on me, all of my relationships depend on me, all of my experiences depend on me. But actually, there is no experience that doesn't depend on you. And this is true for Ishvara also. Anything that exists within time and space that is subject to change and modification subject to infinite division, infinite regress, has to depend on something that is not subject to all of those things, to have an adhishtana. So the bottom line is that Brahman, what is Brahman, is the recognition that my being, the Atma, the self that I am, is Brahman, means is infinite. Is infinite, it is changeless, it is timeless, it is non-dual. But we can't say non-dual until you understand what non-dual means. Non-dual means that my being is actually the adhishtana of everything that is here. Because everything that is here experienced is mithya. If it is mithya, that's what we call maya. We experience it, but it has no real reality. You know how they define maya nicely, kind of cleverly in Vedanta, is ya ma iti maya. That which is not, that is maya. Ya, that which, ma is not. Ya ma iti maya. That is maya. So it's ya ma maya. It's not there. There's no, it has no reality, is the idea. The thing is, we experience it. And so maya is that power of Brahman that Swamiji calls incidental attribute of Brahman. What he means is incidental attribute is that it, just like the crow on the crow on the house of the Brahman is an incidental attribute. It's useful, but it certainly has nothing to do with it. It has nothing to do with the house, other than it makes me recognize that the house. It's incidental. Maya is there as an incidental attribute of Brahman, because from Brahman's standpoint, from your standpoint, it's not even there. There's no place else to put it. No place else to put it, because Brahman is non-dual. Yourself, if you just be with yourself, you ask, how big am I? How small am I? What color am I? Where am I? Where do I exist? What is my adhishtana? These questions just fall off. They just go away into space. They're totally irrelevant questions. Because when yourself, for which time, space, and all of these things are objectified, your being is totally free from all of that. From time, from space, from objectification. Just think about, how big are you? How tall are you? Do you have a right side and a left side? You need space and dimension for all of these things. How long will you last? There's no time for me. Time requires duality. What do you mean how long will I last? There's no change for me. So the me that is right here is it. This is it. This is who I am. And I'm never any different from this. This is my nature. And so this me, that's why now we're doing some more meditation, so we're just starting to get to kind of relax and get some sitting with myself a little bit, kind of getting to know and differentiate myself from all of my experiences, so that you can actually ask yourself those questions. How big am I? How small am I? Do I have a right side? Do I have a left side? Do I, my being, is there the experience of a creation? Is there any experience at all other than me, the very personal me? So we have to recognize that, you know, and then realize that this me, the whole world exists in me as an adhishtana, as its adhishtana. Not that it bombards me and weasels its way in and, you know, changes me in some way. It doesn't at all. But being mithya, there's no part of this creation that is separate, can be separate from me. I try to separate the snake from the rope. It's not a possibility. The only thing really there is the rope. Just think about, okay, there's a snake projected on a rope. What is the rope's experience? There's a snake projected on me. There's no experience. The experience is rope, because that's what's actually there. So in reference, so we have to understand there's like the maya, which is mithya, its experience. So from the standpoint of my body, my mind, my sense organs, they experience me in the sense that they all enjoy the sat chit. I am its adhishtana. So I am their self, truly. I am truly their self from their standpoint. Just like the clay truly is the self of the pot. It's not pretend. Like the pot says, you know, I'm clay. Is that true or not? You have to say, yeah, it's true, because clay is what is its truth. That's right. And so what if I say, talking from the standpoint of this conscious being, that I am a conscious being, and I'm talking about myself as this body, me, this body, mind, sense, organs, yeah, I am a conscious being. Is that true or not? It's absolutely true. It's as true as the clay being the self of the pot, so to speak, you know? So if I say, I am, my mind is saying, I am, and just because it doesn't recognize itself as mitya does not mean that when it says I am, that it's not referring directly immediately to me. It's just because of that ajnanam, it's superimposing its nature, its qualities upon me and me upon it. Whereas in reality, it's only one-way street there. You know, the Maya mind is blessed or enjoys for its being 100% me, the self-me that is Brahman. The self-me that is the very self of Ishwar, the self of all beings. It enjoys that completely. And so it's not wrong. That's why it's so important to understand this, because what is most dear to you is yourself. That's the ananda, that which is the absolute wholeness, is your own being. And so because you, who are actually that me, is actually Brahman, is actually the self of Ishwara, because the mind takes this me to belong to it, then when the Upanishads are talking about the Atma or self, it's somebody else besides me, because I am this. That's the mind thinking, I am the conscious being. And they're trying to tell me that I'm really something else. No, I am me. And then the mind goes, starts freaking out, and it gets very, very worried. The ahankara, which has totally taken me to be the body, mind, sense organs, conscious being to be the body, mind, sense organs, you know, totally believes in that, is totally committed to that. And then this teaching is coming along and trying to destroy me, trying to take me away, trying to make me totally insignificant as though I'm nothing. You know? That's the fear until the mind understands, yes, that the me that I am, the mind talking, the me that I am is the me that I am is actually free from time. That this me that I am never has gone through any change and never will be. And then it starts to have some viveka and recognize that, you know, whatever thoughts are there that are occurring in the mitya me, as these thoughts are occurring, these emotions are occurring, it's not touching me at all. I am absolutely present. I am free. I'm absolutely free. And so then it goes, wow, that's fantastic. But at first it totally freaks out because it thinks that you're trying to destroy it. Right? Because that superimposition is so much, that ajnanam is complete and we all share in it. It's a big deal. You know, somebody's messing around with myself and I don't like that. You know, you listen nicely and calmly, and then you walk out the door. That's what happened to me. You walk out the door and totally freak out. Ha ha. In the end, everything's really good. No problem. So here, I say, Brahm. So this is a big statement, but now don't worry about it. We're going to be going through this and just in so many details, you know. Brahmashriya, sattva, rajas, tamog, guna, atmika, maya, asti. Maya is there. It is there as mitya, right? So its ashriya, means its adhishtana, is Brahman. The adhishtana, this whole maya, this whole infinite creation, has for its ashriya, Brahman. Who is Brahman? Brahman is who I actually am. The self that is really non-dual, because mitya has no being of its own to make for two. So this maya that we experience in the whole form of the whole creation, which itself is made of sattva, rajas, and tamas. That's what its components are for maya. This maya has for its ashraya. Ashraya in this sense is the adhishtana, as Brahman for its adhishtana. So, now, having said that, how does that work then? How does this maya, which is made of sattva, rajas, and tamas, how does it come into being? What happens? The sattva, rajas, and tamas comes into manifestation, then what happens? So now we have to go through the step by step, okay, which we'll start in the next class.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.